like watching Katie Ledecky finish a 1500 meter race.
Right.
You're just like, wow, no one? Huh. Hello, and welcome to Expected Own Goals Gold Edition.
Welcome to Expected Own Gold.
So, the United States today beat Brazil. 1-0. Won a gold medal.
Sure did.
In Emma Hayes' 10th.
Match in charge.
Yeah.
Never not funny to me.
At 10 matches in, Emma Hayes has gold.
Yep.
Question. Was this the worst performance by the U.S. team at this Olympics?
Yes.
Yeah, I don't think it was that close.
Yeah. No, I think it's patently obvious. I mean, think about it. It's the game's a tale of two halves. Anyone who watched that could know that.
Mm-hmm.
The U.S. just got the absolute shit kicked out of them in the first half, turned it around in the second, which is when Swanson got her goal. But in the even despite that overwhelmingly dominant second half performance, the team basically were awash on XG, 1.6 to 1.2 in Brazil's favor. XG per shot, same deal, 0.12 to 0.135. And in every other category, Brazil outplayed the U.S. They had a higher share of completed passes in their respective attacking thirds. They had more touches in the box. They had more shots in the box. They had more quality chances. You know, if any of those three chances in the first half get scored, it's a completely different dynamic and a completely different game state.
Yeah.
That could have ultimately affected the result.
Absolutely.
No, the U.S. has not given up more than, like, I think 1.1 XG in a game for the entire tournament, and they gave up 1.6 today. I mean, they looked a shell of their former selves in those first 45.
Yeah, in the first 45 minutes, they gave up more XG than they'd given up in any one game, I believe.
Yes.
It was,
and some of those games went 120 minutes.
Yeah, so let's talk about what I think Brazil did really well and how in some ways they exposed the United States, a team that is not, despite their 10-0 record under Emma Hayes, without flaws or without the capacity to be beat or outplayed by an opponent. I think we start in the second minute where Ludmilla misses what ends up being Brazil's best chance of the entire day. And that's just sometimes how it goes. Your best chance falls to you. It's a ricochet, I believe, off Girma's leg into Ludmila's path. And Ludmila, who has beat Sam Coffey at that point, she's prospecting on the off chance that the ball makes its way through. And it does. And it falls right to her foot. And she plays a soft shot on the ground to a well-positioned Alyssa Nair.
Mm-hmm.
At that point in the game, what were you thinking?
Holy shit. I mean, what I was thinking was that this what I was thinking was that what I had said when we previewed this game was sort of coming true, which is that the U.S. has demonstrated under Hayes a very, to put it charitably, methodical approach to building out of the back. And Brazil played that type of possession style to perfection against Spain in the semifinal. Played an incredibly aggressive form of counter pressure immediately from first whistle, made their opposition feel incredibly uncomfortable and not allowed them to get settled and start progressing the ball forward, and created good chances out of that pressure. The U.S. has just been too slow in the way that they built out. And no one's bothered to try and exploit that through aggressive counter pressure the way that they did, that Brazil did today. And so I was like, oh, well, this is sort of what we might have thought the game plan would be. It is the game plan. It is working. And how much of an assault is the U.S. going to have to withstand? And it turns out they had to withstand quite a bit in that first half.
Yeah, quite a bit. I was more bullish going into this final. And it's, you know, this result has proved both of us correct about what we thought the ultimate outcome of this game was. But I was really impressed with the way in which Brazil tactically watched what the U.S. had been doing and took away so much of what had worked so far. I'd break it down as Ludmila, along with Yennefer and Gabby Portillo, were doing a really brilliant job making sure that there were no easy passes to be had for the center backs. We've quoted so many of Naomi Girma's eye-popping numbers here. She's had time on the ball throughout this tournament, mm-hmm. which has allowed her to build those numbers. She had no time on the ball today.
None.
And in the first 10, 15 minutes, looked genuinely flustered.
Yeah.
Which was almost surreal to watch. I also thought, in addition to that, Adriana pushed up and essentially pinning back Crystal Dunn didn't allow the U.S. the shape they've been trying to build out with mm-hmm. from the start. And so all the outlet passes that the U.S. has found Dunn a lot of the time, they found tracking back Rodman, those passing lanes were, generally speaking, cut off. And you had Duda Sampaio and Yaya in the middle pressing and denying access for Coffey, Albert, Crystal Dunn, Trinity Rodman. There were no real outlets to be had. And yeah. It took the U.S. a minute to figure out that, like, oh, shit, we just got to play it long.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and this is
which full, is anti-Hazeball.
Yeah, this is full game data, so it's not quite first-half data, but I think this still kind of paints the picture that Duda Sampaio and Vitoria Yaya, they only combined for 10 on-ball defensive actions all day. However, Sam Coffey only completed 67% of her attempted forward passes and carries into or within the final third. Lindsey Horan completed 47% of those types of attempts.
Mm-hmm.
And that should indicate to you that even though Duda and Yaya were not getting on the ball defensively a lot, their pressure, their off-ball defensive work was not allowing the ball to work its way through the midfield when it even got to the midfield.
Correct. And the U.S. passing network basically shows that. It shows as much. If Crystal Dunn could get the ball was immediately played mm-hmm. centrally to Lindsey Horan, who had no time to breathe. And otherwise, you saw a lot of Alyssa Nair kicking long. And ultimately, the adjustment that the U.S. did make at halftime had to do with essentially taking what Brazil gave them.
Yes.
Which was the long ball.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I was surprised that it took that long for the U.S. to recognize how to play out of that pressure. And Brazil, who absolutely busted their ass in the first half, entered halftime really unfortunate to not have a lead
mm-hmm.
and to have not taken their chances. I mean, Ludmila was worth, what, like 0.8 XG in the first half alone?
Yeah.
She was wreaking absolute havoc. Adriana, absolute havoc crossing. There was an opportunity midway through the first half where a cutback was there to a trailing runner that Adriana didn't take. This might be a different game if she makes a different passing choice.
Mm-hmm.
She ended up with a dangerous pass across to Ludmila. If Ludmila is like on time for one of those crosses, or just like if that cross is a little bit softer, we've got a tap in.
Mm-hmm.
Early in the first half, we're not even counting the stuff that they didn't make contact with.
Yeah.
Brazil was so dangerous. And I think it was surprising that the U.S. didn't recognize how to play out of this press and that it took them this long.
Well, one, I think there is always a commitment to plan A with Hayes because she's just so obsessed with trying to build up.
Control.
We've been saying it for months. She is attempting to build up a new tactical and stylistic approach while also trying to play in a competitive major tournament. That's incredibly difficult to do. She took the risk of trying to see if they could make it work for 45 minutes, and they couldn't. And the only reason that things weren't Spain-like in this game is that the U.S. just has better defenders under pressure than Spain mm-hmm. does. Spain has great defenders, but in terms of when they are dealing with that level of counter pressure, the U.S. can just handle it a little bit better. I think also what Elias has been in this tournament and what Hayes has been in this tournament have been really interesting mirrors because mm-hmm. Brazil was a disaster, I think, throughout the group stage and even in elements.
Unmitigated disaster.
Yeah, and even in elements of the quarterfinal against France. But Elias made a decision to roll it all back. Kind of reminded me a little bit of the USA in 2015, where you're scraping through, but you're not playing well. Clearly, your personnel choices are wrong, and then you just kind of hit on a formula that, in retrospect, might look like a brilliant plan, but actually might have been born out of desperation. People forget that it's a yellow card suspension that forces Carly Lloyd up front in the middle of that knockout stage run. Here, Marta, being on a two-game suspension, forced Elias to rethink how he was going to find the right type of progression mixture, and he settled on Gabby Portillo, Jennifer, and Ludmilla. Not all of them started every single game of the knockout stage. All got different amounts of minutes, but those are the three players that have really impressed in the way that they were able to punch France, Spain, and the U.S. in the face early. And demonstrates that Brazil might need to just commit to being a gegenpressing side, which I think would be awesome because we don't have a really good gegenpressing side in the global game at the moment. You know, U.S. isn't that. Japan isn't that.
Japan's the opposite
of
that.
Yeah. France, England, Germany, the Netherlands, Sweden. Like, none of the top sides play like this. And Colombia tried it against Spain. It almost came off. But Brazil have better players who are fitter, you know, top to bottom, not just the front three. And Elias made it all click. And full credit to the players for buying in. I mean, if they get hammered after rotating their lineup like this, as they had all tournament, maybe you talk about it a little bit differently. Did Elias get lucky? Oh, yeah. Brazil got very lucky to even be in this position. But they have hit on something that I think is very effective and is also, much as it was in the men's game 10, 15 years ago, an obvious and incredibly effective countermeasure to what high possession Spanish style football is, and teams are going to have to adjust to that. So I was quite impressed that not only worked against Spain, but he was able to have his team carry that forward against the Americans. The other thing is also, so the contrast is Hayes, who didn't change from minute one to minute 600. Everything changed. Everything stayed the same pretty much until like the second half of the gold medal game, if we're being honest.
I was about to say, I'm not sure I agree with that, because I think the U.S., what Elias forced Hayes into was the U.S. returning to a style she's trying to eradicate.
Yeah, sure.
Which is to say, this high quality, rely on your strikers, play the ball through, chase, get on the end of it.
Yeah, but that's my point. I mean, my point is, until the second half of this gold medal game, she wasn't budging, you know? And then...
Nor had she reason to budge. Right. Because no opposition had been able to deal with what the U.S. was doing, effectively.
Yeah, but I think the thing that Hayes is really going to have to think about, Becky Sauerbrunn said this on Sam Lewis's podcast at Final Whistle, that this very planned and deliberate rest defense approach, when you're in possession by having Fox pulled deep and centrally alongside the center backs and then using Dunn as your wide outlet on that flank, became a little predictable. And you can even see it in today's game, where you look at the flow of entries into the box for the U.S., it's all from the right side. All of it's from the right side because of what Rodman offers you out on that wing, and whatever, you know, midfielder also wants to kind of pull out that way, or the rare moment when Fox gets up high. But to have that very sort of unaltering wing balance from your fullback slash wingbacks means that it's easier to scout. And by contrast, Brazil was very happy to send shit down the right flank. And as you say, either try and get Dunn to overcommit, or more often, especially in the first half, pin her back so she could never get out into possession. That's smart. And that's good. Yeah. That's good scouting. That's really good scouting.
Dunn, who ultimately I think had a really good game, was
defensively in the second half, without a doubt.
Yeah, was dealing with just overloads nonstop, and without the sort of support required, because the U.S. Weren't quick on the uptake about what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they were just the victims of the shock of a team not showing deference.
And along that line of scouting, LES finally did something that we've been screaming for basically 2 weeks, which was get Adriana in the attack. Get her involved.
Yes.
Going forward. Don't have her so defensively committed as a right wing back. And today, that's exactly what they did, because they knew if they wanted to make sure that Dunn couldn't get high and offer combinations on the left, they would have to pin her back. So they used Adriana for the overload.
Absolutely. And moreover, they actually used the U.S.'s emphasis on asymmetry against them.
Exactly.
Adriana in the overload was where the vast majority of the Brazilian attack came from. Yasmin nowhere near as involved on the other side.
That's right.
And often dipping more centrally to help provide the numerical advantage that we saw Brazil regularly capitalize on mm-hmm. throughout the first half.
And that also, all of that movement stretches the U.S. into one direction and then leaves a lot of space for what I think was the singular attacking performance of the first half, which is Ludmilla. And mm-hmm. Red Stars fans, you should be getting excited here, because yeah. Ludmilla was able to continually make center back splitting runs that was either dragging one defender out of position to open up space for someone else or create space for herself to run onto balls. And again, as you say, she generated basically 0.8 XG by herself in the first half. She was an absolute terror. And when she went off in the second half, Brazil did not look like the same team.
No, not at all. I think, though the sequence was called offside, Ludmilla did something that we have not seen done in a very long time, which is to say,
cooking.
Neither her nor Naomi Girma knew that that was an offside. Mm-hmm. And she skinned Naomi Girma yeah. and finished over Alyssa Nair's shoulder, only for the flag to come up. Few players have had the confidence to take on Girma one-on-one. Ludmilla showed no respect, no quarter,
and
like, stop me.
Feather in Girma's cap that the only time that she's been truly beaten like that was up, the forward had to be offside in order for it to happen.
Totally.
You know?
That is correct. That said, I think it really spoke to an attitude and a blueprint I think other international teams will have to take
yeah.
when dealing. Now, I worry about the long-term viability of Elias doing a version of this gegenpressing, given the formation he's attempting to play,
mm-hmm.
just because I think you don't see a lot of gegenpressing with three at the backsides.
Yeah.
It just doesn't give you that solidity that you need.
Yeah, because you're going to get exposed at the back at some point because you're pushing so many numbers forward and so aggressively.
And the U.S. just found really rich passing lanes between the center backs, which is what the goal comes from.
Yeah, so you move into the second half, and yeah, Brazil's luck, you know, whether you want to call it luck, whether you want to call it true talent, skill, preparation, it all starts to fall apart because for all the talk about the U.S. being tired, Brazil's tired too. I mean, someone pointed out that if you add up all of the stoppage time that Brazil has played, they're basically on the same minutes load as the U.S. was, even though the U.S. played two games with extra time. So they're mm-hmm. tired. They're likely not as fit as the U.S., all things considered. And as you say, you try to keep up this level of aggression with playing a back three. As you start to flag, as your passes become less crisp, as your forwards don't make the same level of stretch-inducing runs as they had in the first half, all of a sudden the U.S. can go the other way. And it became a, I don't know, somebody called this the most judo rugby/rugby game that they'd seen in quite some time. It just became a knockdown dragout.
It actually reminded me a fair amount of ice hockey in the sense that the minute the ball entered the defensive zone, you were always looking for the breakout pass. You were always looking for the numerical advantage. You were always looking to line break, which mm-hmm. is a very like high tempo hockey way to play. Mm-hmm. And the U.S. just, this is where athletic superiority takes over. The U.S. just has three absolute dynamos available to them the minute they, in some ways it was like a bunch of Huskies being, you know, unleashed from the sled they'd been holding and just like running roughshod over Brazil. Sof Smith, Mal Swanson, Trinity Rodman is a terrifying three if left unattended or able to run at you. And Brazil, who really spent a ton of energy just dominating in that first half, when that level dropped off even just slightly, it was huge problems for them.
What's so interesting is that the proportion of final third entries and penalty box entries is basically equal from the first half to the second half. Brazil mm-hmm. is just shy of 2-1 in terms of the ratio between each team in both of those categories. The problem is that they did not have the same precision of off-ball movement in the second half to create high-quality chances, because they didn't. I mean, the one quality chance they have in the second half is Adriana's header that forces Alyssa Nair's highlight reel save. Other than that, they don't create anything really of value in terms of chances.
Yeah, her none shall pass hand. Yes. Yeah. And that comes really late in the game.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's when we're starting to get really game statey. I think what we also saw in the U.S. adjustment is you saw Coffey and Albert start to drop deeper and deeper
yeah.
to help clog the Brazilian space. And Brazil no longer had the element of surprise
mm-hmm.
Available to them, and just kind of overcommitted. To come back to a thing you said earlier, comparing Marta to being sort of the Abby Wambach of the 20, you know, Marta is to 2024 Olympics what Abby Wambach is to 2015 World Cup,
mm-hmm.
this sort of accidental discovery. And while it seemed like a very pre-planned sub, the goal from Swanson, which is are just a sort of speculative long ball that she apparently, as she said in her post-match interview, screamed at Sophia Smith to not come touch because Swanson correctly assessed that Smith was offside.
It's great when you watch the replay, you actually see Smith just peel off almost like yep. she's, you know, she's like a wingman in a dogfight.
Yes.
You know, just peeling off from the formation to let you have a clean look. But yeah.
To create space to draw that defender, but also to make sure that when this goes to replay, she is not assessed as involved in the play. And Sophia exactly. Smith is as close as it gets. If I'm refereeing this game, I probably call that offside. I probably assess that Smith is too involved in the play despite not touching it to count as passively offside or uninvolved because she is goal side of her defender. That said, that's not how it was called. And Swanson did everything right in running onto that ball and making sure Smith got no closer than she did. And Swanson's chance, worth noting, is worth more than half of the total XG created by the U.S. in the game.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's that chance, and it's very little else.
Yeah.
As far as, like, true goal-threatening moments.
Yeah, again, but they only had two quality chances the whole game. Swanson created them both.
Yep. And once we get... But once we sort of get past that goal, we have this triple substitution that felt very pre-programmed. And we take Ludmilla, who is dead on her legs at that point. She's put in a hell of a shift. We get Jennifer off, and we get Sampaio off, with Yaya having already left the game injured.
Mm-hmm.
And so the sort of the core of that attack in that middle of the field is completely different. And what we get on is, you know, the goated Marta, but also a significant drop off in mobility from the rest. Priscilia, which is going to do, you know, she's going to do some of the running. And Angelina, who is good, but there is an athleticism drop that Brazil sort of feels immediately. And the U.S. is really able to control the game for the next 20 or so plus minutes after those triple subs, which is not what you want when you make a triple substitution that's planned. Like, yeah. that was where you sort of saw the limitations of Brazil really begin to rear its ugly head. And we get back to what we've been talking about a lot throughout this tournament. Emma Hayes' ball is fine with a 1-0 victory. In fact, we just saw three of them in a row.
As I said earlier, in the second half, Brazil was basically producing the same level of dominance across the half as they had in the first half. But here's the key. All of it comes after the goal, which means that Hayes and the U.S. defense is happy to let them on to them to some extent. I mean, listen, in the 12 minutes between start of the second half and Swanson's goal, Brazil doesn't get into the box once. Yeah. They get into the final third six times, whereas the U.S. gets in 10 times. They create how much XG? Brazil gets off one shot for 0.03 XG in that 12-minute span. Like, that's all the U.S. needed. And then, as you say, they control the game, they ride it out, and then when Brazil is ready to start pressing their advantage again as best they're able to, and it should be noted that there's no more attacking subs coming after that triple sub. The U.S. just can sit deeper and deeper and absorb more and more.
We saw Emma Hayes not believe her bench is very deep. And, you know, we see Sonic come on in the 74th minute for Tierna Davidson, a like for like. We see Lynn Williams on for Soph Smith, who's put in a shift. And we see the only real defensive sub we see is in stoppage time to kill some of the stoppage time. And we see again Kruger on for Swanson. But it's not, there was never an emphasis on outright committing to going and finding a goal and winning a game. Not in any of these knockout games that we watched the U.S. play. It was just, can this forward line find a moment of magic for us? And in the quarterfinal, it was Rodman. In the semifinal, it was Smith. And in the final, it was Swanson.
Go figure. Each one of them.
Go figure. The triple espresso. But
because the bench is so short, I wonder if both Lavelle and Shaw really are carrying a certain level of injury where, well, Hayes is like, well, I got nobody else. So in an absolute break glass in case of emergency situation, they could see time. But if I am able to avoid it as long as possible, they will stay on the bench. Because it is quite strange for Lavelle to not, A, start this game, B, get in this game, but C, somehow be available for this game, unless Hayes has really gone off her noggin. The only explanation I can really see is that Lavelle was maybe carrying something that they were just hoping this game would not require her at all, and it ended up not requiring her.
All right.
What does all of this mean for the U.S. going forward? I don't know if it necessarily means a whole lot, because the Olympics was always going to be a free hit. We've said it a million times. And they managed to win gold, incredibly. But the work was always the 3 years between Hayes showing up in May of 2024 and the World Cup in Brazil in June of 2027.
This gold medal buys goodwill from U.S. fans. But as far as the Emma Hayes project is concerned, this is a solid notch in the belt, but it is, it's a free hit. It's nothing. It's just the early days of an evolution toward winning a World Cup.
Yeah. That's, I think that, if there's anything that we learned, it's that Naomi Girma, Mallory Swanson, Sophia Smith, and Trinity Rodman are pretty essential to the success or failure of the group over the next 3 years. I don't think that's very controversial to say. I think also we do need to, again, what we might even have to just clear out a bonus episode down the line to just be like, we need to talk about Lindsay because she, again, did not have a great game today. In addition to only completing 47% of her forward passing carry attempts into him within the final third. She also didn't attempt a single tackle today.
I do think she's a little dead on her feet, but
yeah, sure.
But today was different. For all the talk of going to Europe and learning how to play tactical European football, Lindsey Horan looked most disjointed and lost of any player on the pitch regularly for the U.S. in this tournament.
Sure. Yeah.
Granted, her position is a nuanced, dynamic one that requires a level of tactical sophistication, but I felt like, and continue to feel like, she's been slower on the uptake for what Emma Hayes is trying to do. And what Emma Hayes is trying to do is win games by making sure there isn't there aren't chances for the opposition to score.
Yeah.
And then finding occasional opportunities to score on the back of a very defensively solid side.
I also think that this isn't necessarily what the team is going to look like tactically in 3 years.
Like, oh, for sure. You know, just talking early days. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, is she gonna be as ruthless in not rotating her lineup when she has five more players on the bench and she can, lean on 3 years of development? Maybe not. What I am taking away from is, like, Sean Nahas and Jordan Angeli both tweeted things basically saying how this game is an advertisement for the superiority of the NWSL for a bunch of different reasons. Because Brazil obviously has a ton of players in the NWSL. And the NWSL is certainly the most competitive league in the world. We've talked about it before. European players who play in Europe could certainly stand to come over here and learn how to play in sort of a very physical transitional form so that they don't get rattled when somebody tries to jump them in the future. But that, I don't think, actually really means that the NWSL is somehow the best league in the world because the U.S. and Brazil are in a final. I mean,
it's... No, we talked about this on the last pod. It's an absurd statement on the surface, and...
But just think about it. Think about it. Like, first of all, there are more leagues represented in both of these international sides than the NWSL, and a lot of the standout players do not play there, like Ludmila, like Gabby Portillo, like Emily Fox, even though she's got history in the league, she doesn't play there anymore. There's not really any NWSL representation at the World Cup last summer. So everybody, this is all noise and no signal.
Correct.
I do not believe, by the way, that means the NWSL is worse than the WSL or the Champions League. I don't think that at all. I think they're just different. And I also, let's check American exceptionalism here for just a moment. It is great that the U.S. won a gold medal. It does not mean that the U.S. is the best international side in the world. They are one of, I think, probably three, maybe four teams that all could lay claim to that in this moment, who all play differently, who all have different strengths and weaknesses, and who all have weaknesses in addition to their strengths. There is no single dominant international side at the moment. The U.S., though, is neither a fraud, nor are they back on the mountaintop with no one else just behind them.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. There are aspects of the NWSL and aspects of just the way American sports leagues work that European sports leagues have no interest in copying or mimicking, particularly teams at the top of those leagues have no interest in participating in. But greater parity among sides and a salary cap or ad salary rules just create a competitive balance that some people really like and that I think is a strong suit of the NWSL, but does limit the upper end of their of what teams can do unless those budgets start eclipsing what the best teams in the world can do.
Right. Yeah. And it's... It's
money, guys. It's always fucking money when it comes to soccer.
And if it's a question of just the number of teams who are willing to spend and can field highly competitive teams, yeah, the NWSL has more of those in these other leagues. But guess what? Where do all of these players play? You know, Not a lot of England's players are playing for Leicester. In fact, none of them are playing for Leicester. Similarly, you don't see a lot of Spain players, you know, hoofing it at Bilbao, who are not a strong side on the women's front. There will remain a high concentration of very good teams who have offered very good training environments in Europe. That will allow for England, Spain, Germany, and France, and the Netherlands, and Sweden, maybe Italy one day, to remain highly competitive.
Yeah, is it funny to me that arguably the two best teams in the women's game in Europe are clubs that have been noted for financial boo-boos, shall we say, in Barcelona and Chelsea?
Mm-hmm.
I find that funny. But I don't think... it's like betting on the weather in Southern California. Tomorrow will probably look a lot like today and yesterday before it. Chelsea and Barcelona, not going anywhere. Going to continue playing at the very upper end of this sport, and going to continue enriching the national teams of the players who play at clubs like it. Same thing is true for Olympic Lyonnais. Same thing is true for, you know, Arsenal.
Men's international football is at such a level of parity among the dozen or so top programs that their success or failure during any cycle is entirely dependent on the luck of the draw with which players from those countries are peaking when those tournaments occur. You know, the belief that Spain, England, the US, or any other nation can put together a string of highly dominant tournament performances for more than a decade or perhaps longer, those days don't exist anymore.
Yeah,
and that's okay.
Gone.
Again, this is like one of the founding principles of this show. The U.S. is not the best in the world, but they probably shouldn't be, and that's fine. They won a gold medal. Doesn't mean they're going to win the World Cup in 3 years or win another gold medal in Los Angeles in 4 years. And that won't be any bearing on the health or disease of the program. It's just
we're
a very good women's soccer country among many other good women's soccer countries. And it doesn't matter if the players are in season when these tournaments come about, or that they play in a much more physical transition-oriented league, or any of that shit. It's nonsense.
No, we've just gotten to a point where this sport has enough variation and there are enough high-quality sides. Look, we are one Megan Rapinoe Wundercross away from...
crashing out in 2011.
Correct. And we are... that 2019 team, utterly dominant. That 2015 team...
except they weren't. They weren't utterly dominant. They won... but those games were close in the knockout stages. Yeah, people continually forget that.
No, that's fair.
Steph Houghton makes that penalty in the semifinal. England might be going to the final in that tournament.
Correct. And there is a razor's edge on which all soccer is played. We saw a very dominant Spain, not even medal in this tournament. It just speaks to the quality of where the sport is now. And
that said, Only France can even make an argument that they have as good a front three as the U.S. right now.
That's correct.
And their head coach chose not to play one of their front three through by the end of that tournament. So the U.S., once again, does have the best and most dominant attacking players, no question. But
yeah, I mean, other than Zambia, you know, throw those Zambian front on a Naomi Girma-led defense. Maybe we're talking about a yet more dominant team.
Well, wait, what's the operative word you just said in that sentence?
Yeah.
Naomi Girma level defense.
Correct. Which is to say the U.S. have three of the 10 or so best attackers in the world starting for them. That is very unfair and would be very unfair on the men's side if you could say that same statement about a team.
Yeah.
Does it guarantee that you win tournaments? It absolutely does not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Celebrate the fact that the U.S. won a gold medal, but have the humility to recognize that, like, that's just a good thing that happened,
mm-hmm.
and is not a predictor of a return to a dominance that will never exist again.
Exactly right. I think that we should hope for more and better international programs to continue developing, and you should have the intellectual honesty to remind yourself that to win 6 games in 17 days, a lot has to go right that is completely outside of your control.
Yeah.
Mewis and Sauerbrunn were both talking about how, like, oh, I was questioning a lot of Emma's decisions, but we won, so obviously she was doing everything right. That's not true.
No, that's not how that works.
She just got lucky.
She got lucky. Ludmilla did not score in the second minute. Do I think the U.S. could have found a way back into the game? Yeah, absolutely. I do think that. That said, it would have caused a very different set of problems. And mm-hmm. if Brazil had been up, I mean, they would have ridden their luck, but if they had been up 2-0 after the two good Ludmilla chances in the first half, it would have been, we would have been hard pressed to say they hadn't created enough to have that lead rather justifiably.
Yeah, and I think actually what I really mean is, like, for all of the qualities of the strength and conditioning and medical staff inside U.S. soccer and inside this program, they are lucky that nobody got hurt. Or rather, they are lucky that no more players got hurt than did.
Yeah.
You know, because that is, it's a gamble. It's just like it was a gamble with Elias doing the high levels of rotation he did all tournament and changing his tactics in the middle of the knockout stage. Yeah. Like, you roll the dice. It does not mean you are smarter or you saw something bit more differently than your opponent did. And you can claim all day that lack of rotation means you win tournaments. Habeas corpus, show me the body, give me the evidence, because I'm not seeing it yet. So cheer the win. And I think maybe the right note to close this on is what Crystal Dunn said to the press after the game. And I'm not going to get this verbatim, but basically something to the effect of, we are celebrating this. This is incredible. But we also know this is the first step of a lot of hard work ahead of us. There's a lot more to be done.
Mm-hmm.
That's the right way to view this.
Yeah, I agree. All right. Well, this has been, we'll follow up later in the week with a sort of a more comprehensive look at this tournament and
yes,
a broader look. You can listen to that.
Only hear it on our Patreon, though.
Yeah.
So if you are not a member, sign up for $6 a month.
Yeah. And I want to thank the 100 or so of you who have signed up already. It's really exciting. You've far exceeded our own modest expectations for what we would accomplish in this time. And we are so grateful for those of you who have helped build and grow this community. We'll have a lot of fun things coming up this fall as we return to our regularly scheduled NWSL and occasional European League soccer coverage. These tournaments are always very hectic and chaotic to cover. We end up doing a lot of talking and a lot of editing. I, for one, am looking forward to a chiller schedule coming up.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm also really excited because we're about to pick back up a pretty damn exciting NWSL season and a really fascinating home stretch run for a bunch of teams here.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you came to the show during the Olympics and you've been enjoying the show, stick around. Episodes on our main feed come out every Tuesday during the season, so you can tune in to us then to get all of your club soccer needs broken down tactically and analytically as we do and have been doing all tournament. And if you are not following us on social media, follow us at xowngoals. That's the letter X, own goals, including Blue Sky. Email us at expectedowngoals@gmail.com. That's the letter expectedowngoals@gmail.com. If you have feedback or if you believe we've made an own goal, if you want to sign up for our Patreon, patreon.com/xowngoals. That's the letter X, own goals. And that link is also in the show notes.
Yeah. Thank you, guys. Talk soon.
Get some rest, everybody. And I say that to myself and to Eric. Let's get some rest.
Bye.
Yep.